This is Gina Cressy. Today is August 15th, 2000. I'm at the Community Hall in Bayside, and I'm about to interview Zelma McCormick Huntu. Zelma, why don't I start by asking you to tell me how your family first came to Bayside?
Okay, well, I'm not sure. I can only speculate. My mother's family, my mother's mother's family, were all from Orono, and they were Methodists. And so I suspect that my great-grandmother and my great-aunt came down here to Bayside, the late 1800s, perhaps.
Okay.
Because we've always known about Bayside. Mm-hmm. And in the teens and the 20s, my family came here off and on. But then when I was born, we went to Temple Heights.
Okay.
Because my mother didn't like Bayside, because she said it was too crowded and too tacky. So she liked it down at Sandy Cove, and we spent a couple of summers down there and also Temple Heights. But then we left and went back up to the interior. We had relatives all over mm-hmm. Maine, so we used to go and spend the summer with them,
sure.
Some or the other of them. So that's, we've always known about Bayside,
right.
I'm saying.
Right. And so what year would you say it was that, in all likelihood, you first spent a summer here?
Well, I know the first summer I spent here was 1943,
okay.
I think it was. And the way that happened is sort of interesting. My aunt and I were up in Maine here, staying up at the family's house in Orono.
Mm-hmm.
And the family had all died, and my aunt owned the house there. And Orono was a deadly place for a teenager. So, but she rented it during the summer to Athena and Jason Tibbetts, who owned, Jason owned the store down here.
Okay.
And she knew the Tibbetts because she had had him in school when she was a teacher. He had been in her class, school. So Athena called up Anna Grant and wrote to her and said, would she come down to Bayside and take care of her three boys while Athena went up and did canning up at the house.
Uh-huh.
So Annie Cran thought that was a great idea because it would get me out of her hair. So we came down and we stayed a week. And Annie Cran, we stayed at Athena's cottage, which is the one that Jackie Pacey has now.
Okay, so and that
yeah.
would be on
Main Street.
Main Street,
yeah,
near
second
the corner. Okay.
Yeah. And so we stayed there a week, and then Athena, I guess, liked it being up there without her boys and her husband at canning, so she said, well, we stay another week, and Annie Grant said, fine. Now, I don't remember anything about the stay. I don't remember staying in that house. I don't remember staying with the boys. Of course, I
yeah.
remember the boys, nothing. But boy, I remember Bayside. And that second week, I said to Annie Grant, I want a cottage here. So Annie Grant, great thing to have is a maiden aunt, and that's
mm-hmm.
what Annie Grant was. So we went around that week and found a cottage, and she bought it that week.
Isn't that something? Now, how old were you?
I was 14.
You were 14, yeah. And that cottage was which cottage?
That's a cottage up on Main Street, the second one, well, there's the one at the corner.
Yeah.
And it's the next one down.
Okay.
The corner. It's next to the Parsons, up
yeah.
the Parsons.
Right.
So, of course, we didn't stay in it that summer, mm-hmm. but we did the next summer, and then every summer afterwards until I got married.
Let's digress here just a little bit so you can tell me where the rest of your life was being spent.
Oh, New York City.
Where you were born.
Yeah.
Okay.
And went to school.
Mm-hmm.
But we always came to Maine. I mean, I was, every summer we spent in Maine somewhere.
Right.
And, but then once we came to Bayside, my aunt and I used to come up. My mother worked.
Yeah.
And Annie Graham was a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So she had me on our hands.
Yes.
And
what was her last name?
Maury, M-O-R-E-Y.
Okay.
And she was awful good to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, she must have enjoyed you too, or she wouldn't have.
Well, I guess she she was a typical maiden aunt, and did everything for her nieces, and she had, I don't know, 10 nieces and one nephew.
Well, now were any of them up here over the course of the summer as well?
Let's see. Well, some of them would. Of course, my sister came up, but Gwen, by that time, was already out of college and was working, so she came up. She wasn't wild about Bayside because she didn't like the sun.
Okay.
So she, and, no, some would come down and visit, but there were none staying right here with us.
You were the regular.
Yeah, I was the regular.
All right, so we've got you in place. We know how old you were. You were 14, and the year was?
1943, we bought it. First summer we spent here, I think, was 44.
Okay.
Yeah, I may be off a year. May have been 42 and 43, but I think it was 43 and 44.
So when you look back on that period, and we know that that's when World War II is happening, was there a distinctly observable absence of men in the community?
Well, I don't know, but there wasn't an absence of boys, I'll tell you.
Okay, let's go there now. At that point,
I wasn't caring much about the men. It was the boys.
Tell me who some of them were and what you did.
Well, the thing that I remember most pronouncedly is that in the summer of 1944, Joe Hantoum, who was at that time Joe Martin, because he had taken his stepfather's name, and I sat on the corner of Main Street and Brooklyn one afternoon into the evening arguing politics, because that was an election year.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was a Democrat. He will not tell me, but I think he was.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of my first memories, was Joe and I battling.
Okay, that's, I don't have to ask you how you met him.
And I'll tell you, that was, 56 years ago, and we battled every year.
It's a strong bond.
And so there was Joe, and then there was Bill Parzon next door, who I had a flaming crush on, because he was so good.
Uh-huh.
But he left probably maybe even that summer of 44, must have been, to go into the service.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't see much of him, but oh gosh, he was good looking. And there was Bob Leonard, who was beneath him to talk to me. And
was he older?
No, he's about the same age. Mm-hmm. But just like now, there were crowds.
Sure.
And my crowd was Pam Short, who is Joanne Coughlin's younger sister.
Was that Steve's mother?
Steve's mother.
Okay.
And Arnie Kroskel, Merithu, who is Eleanor Fuller's sister. And we all lived on Main Street,
mm-hmm.
and we were the threesome in town.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there were people like Gene Mulvaney, who was just the ne plus ultra here. Beautiful. And really, she was, if you talk about A-list, she was double A-list.
Oh.
And Gene Burbank, who was very nice looking, and, oh gosh, well, the Tardiffs, Hook sisters. Jeanette Tardiff and Sister Marilyn,
mm-hmm.
and of course Joanne, who was a little bit older.
Yeah.
Sybil, who was just a little bit older,
mm-hmm.
but just a little bit older made a difference.
Still does, I think.
And Laura Clemens, and as far as the boys, Bob Witherell, who I went out with later on,
uh-huh.
he was in the Navy, so he wasn't here those early
okay.
years. Oh, and there was Pumpkin. Eden, maybe. I don't know. I can't.
Is it a boy or a girl?
A boy.
Nick.
And then, of course, the whole sailing school crowd.
Sure.
I don't know if they were here in 44. I think maybe they were.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Dick Wagner and Don Knott and Steve Kenyon and a whole bunch of neat guys.
That's what brought them into town.
That's right.
Yes.
I don't remember any of the girls that were in that crowd. So that was it. There were about, I would say 30 or 40 teenagers
mm-hmm.
that moved in a swarm in this place.
Yeah.
And they sort of split off into crowds, into groups.
Mm-hmm.
But we all knew each other, and occasionally we'd all assemble in the park. And I remember one time we formed a great line that stretched all the way up the park and into the road, and we walked through Bayside singing songs. Because one of the things that happened here was, during the war, since we couldn't get out, I mean, no one had gas, nothing was going on, I guess out of self-preservation, the parents took on entertaining us, or doing things
mm-hmm.
to entertain us.
Yeah.
And one of the things were every year they had a minstrel show or a variety show. And we learned at those all the words to all the old songs like Shine On or Harvest Moon and We Ain't Got a Barrel of Money and A Good Man is Hard to Find.
Yeah.
Those are the only songs that I know all the words to now. So we used to go through town singing those.
Now, who were some of the parents who organized
Well, John and, well, Mr. and Mrs. Short, Joanne Coughlin's mother and father. Of course, he started the yacht club and... Agnes, sure. Of course, I never called her Agnes.
Of course.
She was a big mover in getting the shows going.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they were, at the early days, they were minstrel shows, and Gene Mulvaney's father and, I don't remember his first name. Good thing you're doing it this year. Next year I wouldn't remember any of this. And Arnie Crosco's father used to be the end men in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would organize them, and I know Halois Leonard, who was Bob Leonard's mother and Adelaide Lincoln's aunt, she did scavenger hunts and treasure hunts for us.
Great.
And Eleanor Fuller, whose husband was in the service, she ran dances twice a week, Tuesday and Friday, Saturday night dances. And so there was a lot of wonderful things going on.
Sounds like it. Did you all pretty much come in the beginning of the summer and stay?
Yep.
Now, did you have cars?
Nope.
No cars. How did you get your groceries? Tell me about what stores.
I don't know. I didn't get them.
That wasn't your problem.
Well, there was the stage, as they called it, who was one of the page women that delivered the mail down here because we had the post office. And Athena Tibbetts for a while there was postmistress, the Athena Tibbetts, whose house we'd stayed at. And Adelaide Lincoln, who was Adelaide Barrack, worked in the post office there. So there was a stage that used to bring, and Joe would remember which page it was, the mail down. Going back, you could get a ride with her.
Okay.
And I guess people got cabs and came in, but there was the Hastings store up on George Street, which is across now from where the Townsend Cottage is, where Bartlett's
is. Yes.
And you could buy milk and eggs and vegetables and things like that, canned goods.
How about candy bars? Would kids wander in and out of there?
Oh, yeah, it wasn't a candy, it was more a little grocery store.
Yeah.
And run by Mr. and Mrs. Hastings.
Okay.
And anything you want that they didn't have, Mrs. Hastings would say, "No, we don't have lemons. Don't you know there's a war on?" So anyway, so you could get milk there and things that you needed, and then, I don't know, I guess they took cabs in. I don't know how they did.
But the kids didn't ever go into the movies, for example.
Oh, yeah, we hitchhiked.
You hitchhiked?
Yes.
So?
Now, don't let my dead mother or aunt know that.
Absolutely.
No, we used to hitchhike it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it was, there was very few cars on the road.
No, it was a safer
time. And we'd go in, there was a late afternoon movie, and you could go in maybe like, I don't know, maybe 6 o'clock or something like that. And you'd get out before dark. All right. And then there was always be someone there who had driven in and you'd get a ride in.
Right.
So Pammy and I and Joanne and Arnie Crosco and Estelle Crosco, my sister, we used to hitchhike in. And Pammy and I used to sometimes by ourselves and had some really funny and some really scary experiences.
Ooh, do you want to tell us?
Well, the funny one was it was just Pammy and me. Pammy and I were buddies, I'll tell you. She was a great, amusing, funny girl, and beautiful, just beautiful. And so we went out to, of course, we would walk out to Route 1, to what was then Brown's Corner, and hitchhike.
Yeah.
So these two guys stopped, and they had this big truck with the sides, you know, that were just sort of loose sides flapping around, and they said, "Hop in the back." So we got it, hopped in the back, truck took off. The last load in that had been manure. Pammy and I got to laughing, and we said, "We're going to have the whole theater to ourselves." and we couldn't get off. There we were with this manure. I mean, there was no piles of manure or anything there, but the smell was there. So that was one time. Then another time, and this was really scary, we had gotten out and had delayed or something out of the movies. I don't know what we had done. But everyone who were coming down was coming down to Bayside had gone. So there we were, and there were five of us. Pammy, Joanne, Arnie, Estelle, and one other person. I don't know who it was. So we started walking, and it was dark.
Yeah.
It was, and the street lights came on, and so it was dark. Yeah. And we got down, and there's the last street light there in Belfast.
Uh-huh.
We walked past, and then it was really dark. So we're walking along, and some car comes along and stops and says, "Would you girls like a ride? There's two guys up there." And we said, "No, we're just going a little ways." So I said, "Well, one of the guys said, how far are you going?" Oh, I don't know, I or Pammy or someone said, "We're just down to that White House down there." Well, the White House down there was the home for Wayward girls. They drove off. We got past the house. He said, "My God, you told him we were going to the home for Wayward girls." So we kept walking. Well, they came back around, and they kept slowing down and going. Well, meanwhile, it was getting darker and darker, and the houses were getting sparser, and we were scared.
But
so finally, we got to this house, and I try to find it now, and I can't find it. It was back from the road, and it had bushes in front of it, and there was a road. I know where the road is. The road went up, was on the right-hand side, Route 1. So they came down past us, and when they got past, we went and ran and hid behind these bushes in front of the porch. And the porch was sort of raised up, and we hid there. And we saw them come back and go down that road and come back and go down. And we, of course, were whispering. Then we hear someone says, "Honey, there's noises out here." So someone comes out on the porch. Well, of course, if we had made ourselves known and told her, I'm sure she would have given it. But we felt so guilty about hiding there that we all, no, there's no one out there. Come on in here. There's no one out there. So finally, we waited and waited and waited, and they didn't come. And we came out, and I'll tell you, Gina, we ran the whole way home. We were so scared. And that was pretty much the last time that we... Not the very last time, but we thought a lot about before we hitchhiked.
Yes.
And I was forbidden to hitchhike.
Of course.
You know.
Of course.
So, which was embarrassing, the time that I came down into town and my aunt is standing there and Pammy and I are in the back seat of the car with two guys in front, and Annie Fran says, introduce us to your friends.
Uh-huh.
So, but anyway, so that's how we used to get into Belfast.
Now, was this an era when dances would occur right here in the community hall?
Oh, yeah. Eleanor Fuller ran dances every Tuesday and Saturday night. And some years, I don't remember how many, at the end of the season, she'd have a formal for us. And she was wonderful. She would play records and we'd dance. And it was nice because everybody came. There'd be little kids, there'd be parents. And it was just really very nice.
That is nice. Now, how is she related, if at all, to Gordon Fuller?
Mother. She's his mother.
She's his mother,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And she was my friend Arnie's half-sister.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, her husband was in the Army. And so she was down here. She was a teacher, so she had the summer off.
Mm-hmm.
And she was both Eleanor and the kids that were involved in the dances remember it very, very fondly.
I gather that from talking to other people. Did you dress up or was it come as you are?
Oh, no, well, I think we'd wear skirts and a blouse. It was kind of an occasion.
Yeah.
And the thing that was great was she'd have a grand march.
Ah.
You know, we'd start out and form you know, first two pairs would go down and then fours would go down and no, it was,
that
it
sounds
was
like really, fun.
It was fun, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your memories of the waterfront.
Well, of course the wharf, I suppose I better tell you one of my memories, but the wharf was the gathering place.
Well,
and you go down there, and it really saddens me now to see that during the week it's not.
That's like pretty quiet. You're talking about day and night?
Well, yes, but I mean, I talk mostly about day.
Okay.
Night, you kind of hit out down there.
Okay.
But, no, during the day, and it would just be a line of bodies sunning on the...
Tell me a little bit, Selma, about some of the things that used to go on down at the wharf.
Well, the wharf was the center of the activity for the teenagers on a nice day. And you'd go down there, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, and it would just be wall-to-wall people getting tans and swimming and boating, and because there were some sailboats, not nearly as much as there are now, but there were a number of sailboats. And it was just very active, and that's where the action was. And so I used to go down there, and people would go on swimming, and I don't like the heat or the sun, so I'd lie out in the wharf as much as I could, and then I'd go into the water and cool down, and then come back up. Of course, that gave me a nice tan, but that was the whole thing, was get a beautiful tan.
Sure.
Now, I don't burn a tan very much, and so it never really wrecked my, and I didn't like the sun, so it didn't wreck my skin. But boy, some of the women that now that I knew that, you know, were down there, it's really sad. Yeah, Jean Burbank, for instance, she was a beautiful young girl, beautiful. And towards the end of her life, her skin looked like leather.
Okay.
And of course, she had the most beautiful tan of anyone down here.
Oh, we thought it was the healthiest thing.
That's right. Yeah.
Sunshine, vitamin D.
So, and then the boys would come down and pester us. And pour buckets of water on us, and or take us out sailing. I used to sail with Joe, and he said, he always asked me because I was the best ballast. And so he didn't have a boat of his own, but he sailed Janie Shore, well, Janie Jennings' snipe. And Janie was Richard Jennings, his Richard Jennings' sister, and Richard Jennings was Joe's best friend. Down here. He lived up in the Wake farmhouse across from the golf course.
Related how to George Jennings?
His brother. His younger brother, mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was one of the guys down here. And there was a close connection between Richard and Joe's family. And in fact, Richard went to Boston Latin and lived with Julia and Vaughn Hamilton, who are the people that had our house before we did.
Okay.
So it's all very, very inbred.
Yeah. Sure. Now, Adelaide went to Boston Latin as well.
I guess she did, yeah. Right.
Was there a lifeguard in that era?
No, not that I remember.
And so did people feel free to show one another in the drink?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, all sorts of things. But there were adults around, because there were people spending the summer here.
Yes.
Mothers and stuff. And the kids, they were pretty good. I mean, no one shut me in ever, because they knew that I wasn't a strong swimmer, and that I was afraid of the water.
So.
And the only thing that anyone ever did was, again, Joe, who, when I was coming up on the swimming wharf one time, gasping for breath, he'd come over and stuff on my head. Well, it was so mean. That when I told Pammy Short that he and I were getting married, Pammy said to me, "So how would you marry him after all the mean things he's done to you?" And I said, "Well, like what, Pammy?" Because I thought maybe I had forgotten some. So she said, "Well, what about the time he took you to the movies with his slippers on, and remember how embarrassed you were?" So that sort of thing went on here. And,
now, let's run through the history of this romance. When did you start being an item, actually dating?
We dated during the summer.
Yeah.
But I always had another boyfriend at home.
Right.
And we were more friends.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go out together and heckle each other, but we were always just really good friends. And one year I came up expecting very much to see Joe and dating him, and he stayed away for the first part of the summer. Mm. And he's since told me he was retrenching. So it was really kind of friends more than any. Well, you know, in those days you didn't get as serious as they do now.
Right.
Because your sexual involvement was very much less.
Different story.
And which in a way was a better thing, because you could go out with several guys.
Right.
And so Joe was always there and I was always there, and we always liked each other.
Yeah.
But we used to have terrible fights.
Did the other kids think it was amusing to see you two having at it, or?
Joe was odd man out here.
Ah.
He went his own way.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the crowd, but not really part of the crowd.
Yeah.
Because he did his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, they didn't. They didn't think anything of it, except he was funny. One time, Pammy and I asked him, he had this old car, an old 32 Ford, and we asked him for a ride-up for the walk. Well, the reason we wanted the ride-up, Pammy lived up where Mary Ellen lives there, you know, up on the top of Main Street there. The reason we asked him is we had to go to the bathroom. And so we said, hey, Joe, give us a ride-up to Pammy's house. So Joseph said, hop in. So we get up there, and as we tried to get out, he would make the car jerk. And every time we'd start to get out of the car, he'd jerk it. Well, I jumped out, and then Pammy got out. We got to laughing so that Pammy wet her pants. She was furious with him. She was furious. And she said, well, I'm glad I hit him over the head with that 2x4. And I said, what do you mean? When they were kids, one time he ruined their game and of house, and Pammy hit him on the head with a 2x4. So I always said, well, that's always good ones.
That explains.
But it was just a big crowd, and we all, now there was more pairing off and I think more serious romances than probably Joe and I had.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't one for serious romances. Yeah. I didn't want to get involved.
And how old were you when you eventually got engaged?
Oh God, we were, I was 26. And we got married at the Chapel of Columbia because I had gone to school there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any other church affiliation. Mm-hmm. So the minister, the chaplain of Columbia, wanted to interview us before he married us. So we went over one day and he asked us, first question was, how long had you known each other? So Joe and I got into one of our usual arguments about whether it was 11 or 12 years. And the minister kept trying to interrupt us. Well, yeah. You just don't interrupt Joe and me when we're arguing. And so finally he raised his voice. He said, listen, I just wanted to know if you two knew each other more than one semester.
He got his answer.
But the thing was, well, it surprised people up here because people didn't know that I was seeing Joe also during the winter, because his family lived in New Jersey, his mm-hmm. stepmother and father.
Mm-hmm.
And when he'd come down from Bowdoin at Christmas time, he'd call me up and we'd go out together. So we saw each other consistently over those years.
Right.
And he finally, when we decided to get married, he said, I just waited. He said, I knew you'd marry me eventually. And it just felt awfully right.
Well,
we were such good friends.
Yes, and that's the thing that has to last. And has.
Yeah, and well, now, I mean, I went around with several other guys and beforehand, and I thought, oh God, I never knew what I needed in a husband. And what I needed in a husband was someone let me do just what I damn pleased.
Yes.
And any of the other guys would have been perfect enough.
Yeah.
I don't know how I could be married to anyone but Joe.
So you found exactly the right match.
Absolutely. So anyway, but the, you know, you had said about to think of something that I might forget,
yes.
And I almost forgot it. One of the most, I don't know, significant, let me put it that way, things that happened in my early days of Bayside here was the day they dropped the atom bomb on Japan.
Oh, tell me everything you remember.
Well, here's the story on that. We were living, you know, in the cottage, my aunt and I guess my mother was there also, because it was in August, next to the Parsons. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Bill was still in the service, but Bill had a young cousin whose mother and father were there at the time, Petey Splane. Petey was 5 years old. Brightest kid I've ever seen in my life. Incredibly bright child. They were Californian. I didn't know them well, but mm-hmm. we knew Petey because he'd come over and talk, cute yeah. little boy. And one day he came running up on the porch and he said, "The war is over, the war is over." And we said, "What do you mean?" He said, "We dropped a big bomb on Japan and it's all over." So he said, "Petey, are you making..." "No, no, how do you know?" "Somebody told me. Somebody told me, but the war is over." And he went around this neighborhood telling people that. Well, we didn't have a radio.
Oh.
We went up and down the street trying to find someone with a radio.
Yeah.
And we found someone, and I won't say who it was.
Okay.
And they said, yes, they had a radio. And we said, well, there is just spectacular news on. Can we come in and listen to it on the radio? And they said, no, they didn't want to listen to it. So it was really several days until we got a newspaper that we knew the whole story.
Isn't that something? It was just a rumor from a little kid.
Yeah, apparently someone had come and told the Parslows, but none of us had a radio.
Isn't that something?
Is that something?
Yes.
I mean, we had one, but it wasn't working.
Yeah.
That was what the problem was.
Gosh.
And I always remember that, one of the most significant event of the 20th century, and I couldn't even listen to it on the radio.
That does say something about what a different time it was.
It really was. It really was.
Now, let's go from there a little bit to what some of the other mundane household appliances that we all use today and take for granted now. How did you get your clothes clean?
Well, I wore all my clothes until I didn't have any clean ones. Yeah. And then I wore my bathing suit all day and washed in the sink, the tub. We didn't have a hot water heater, and we heated water. And we didn't, of course, dry. We get dry. Right. At the beginning, we didn't dry. We dried them out, and God help me, if we had a spell of weather like this, I would run around in my bathing suit and a sweater.
Sure.
So that's how we did that.
Yeah.
And of course, there was no laundromat or anything. I mean, in those days, it was really camping.
Yes, more like the
camp. It was more like, and they were called camps.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we didn't have a hot water heater. We did have a tub.
Yeah.
We had an electric stove. Small electric stove, but we also had a cook stove.
Okay.
Which was my great grandmother's cook stove. And we just got rid of that 2 years ago.
So what would have been involved in taking a bath, for example?
Oh, heating water.
Heat the water on the stove.
Yeah, and
carry it over to the tub.
Yeah. Or sometimes just put it in a big wash tub and do a sponge bath.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
so things we would consider primitive now is just how everybody lived.
Yeah, I mean, they were primitive for me because after all, I came from New York City.
Right.
And we certainly had water and tubs and all of that.
How about refrigeration?
Well, for the first, I don't know how long it was, for the first few years anyway, we had an icebox and that was out on the porch.
Hmm.
And, we had that. Well into the late 40s, an icebox. And there was a guy, Jack, who came around and delivered blocks of ice.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how frequently, maybe a couple of times a week. And the ice house is the house that Betty Hawkins has now.
Oh, next to the trenches. Yeah.
And I don't know how the ice got in there.
How it stayed cold.
I know how it stayed cold because Pammy and I went up one time and looked into the ice house, which was a very daring thing.
Ooh.
And what it was they had a big pit that was like, I'm sure Betty is used as a foundation now, a big pit that blocks of ice were down in there and covered with, I don't know, sawdust or straw or something like that. And then there was a walkway around it, and that was what the ice house was.
Gosh.
Now, other people, I'm sure, had refrigerators, but the house, our cottage, came with an icebox.
Yeah, that's what
I used an icebox. Because Anne Fran had lived in Maine, and she wasn't put off by these primitives.
She wasn't a New Yorker.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So washing dishes after dinner, for example?
Well, yeah.
Heat up the water.
Yeah.
Do you have garbage pickup the way we do now?
Yeah, Jack did garbage pickup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have a police officer?
Yeah, Joe Hussey was the constable.
Okay.
And he lived up on the corner there of Main and Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
That street.
And did he get along well with teenagers?
Oh, yeah. He was. There wasn't really any trouble too much with the teenagers that I knew of. There were, every once in a while, we'd have a tough kid come in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember John Short got into a battle, a fist fight with one of them.
Mm-hmm.
A real rotten kid. But there were a number of men that were here all summer.
Uh-huh.
John Short was here very often because he was a salesman, and so he'd be here. And John Mulvaney was a teacher, so he was here all summer. Kelly Proskell worked for Sears, but he was down here every night.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a male presence here. And they were, you know, men that people cared about.
Sure.
And respected.
Mm-hmm.
And who was it? They were all a presence here.
Yes.
So I don't remember any sort of, oh, there was some, you know, street bikes out and this sort of thing, but nothing, no heavy drinking or anything like that.
How about stuff like sneaking up to the mansion or the golf course?
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's harmless.
Yeah. Wendy was telling me about her excavates. I think the only bad thing that we did, well, we did a number of bad things, but crazy things. But this was, I mean, we weren't kids, we were in college at this point. And a friend of mine came up from New York, and she said she wanted a souvenir of Maine. So Joan and Richard Jennings said, well, how about a pine tree? So Grace thought that was just fine. Now, mind you, Grace came up here by bus. I mean, she took the bus from Boston, train from New York to Boston, and then bus from Boston to New York. Oh, yeah, she'd like to take pine tree home. So at about 2 o'clock in the morning, we went out and dug up a pine tree, a little pine tree like this, that was right across from where the Burbank's house is. And it was nice. They were all planted in a row there. And the little pine tree seedlings, well, they're not that high.
Mm-hmm.
And after we dug it up, Joe said, you know, he thought that that pine tree was the Burbank's pine tree. I was like, so we dug it up, and they wrapped it up for us, and we brought it home. We got home about 4 o'clock in the morning. And my aunt got up, and she said, what are you kids doing? So there was this pine tree, and wrapped up, and she said, my God, she said, Grace, you can't carry this home. She unwrapped it, and those two bums had filled the wrappings full of stones.
Oh!
So she, God love her, she wrapped wet paper around it and wrapped it up nicely. Meanwhile, there had been a big clod of dirt that the boys had taken off with them. And so Grace wraps this thing up. She walks from Bayside to Brown's Corner to where the store is to get the bus, carrying the pine tree at 5 o'clock in the morning because the bus came through at 6.
Uh-huh.
Goes to Boston, checks it at North Station because she's going to have lunch with a friend of ours who was from Bayside, Harry Williams, but who was working in Boston. Takes it down by train, Grand Central, changes and takes the train out to Yonkers, comes to the door and says to her mother, Mom, look what I have for you. And her mother says, oh, Grace, why didn't you bring two? But in any case, the next morning I come down and sitting in the basketball basket is the big clump of dirt. Oh, and it's pouring rain.
Oh.
Well, John Short was furious. And he was going around asking who had done that.
Yes.
Well, I knew who had done it, but John was so angry I didn't dare to tell him. To this day, Joe will not admit that he did that.
Do you think he honestly forgot?
No. The day after he wouldn't admit it.
Okay.
No.
It's not a repressed
mess. I mean, to me, that was really vandalism.
Well, I like to think that there could be a tall pine tree in Yonkers today.
Oh, there was. Oh, there was. A couple of years later, we went down and looked at it, and that thing was probably 10 feet tall.
Isn't that something?
But then they moved, and I had said to Grace, if they ever moved, I wanted the tree. But, you know, living in an apartment in New York would have been hard to do.
Probably. Yeah. Would have been hard to do.
But the other excitement during that time was the Coast Guard boats that used to come in.
Oh.
And we used to play around with those.
Now, why were they coming?
Well, they were patrolling the bay during the war, and there was a anti-submarine boat that used to anchor off because it had live depth charges on it and you couldn't come into the war. One night after one of the dances, a bunch of us rowed out to it and tried to board it.
How far did you get?
Well, we got up to just standing up and holding on to the sides, and then there was a seaman there with the gun pointed at us.
That sends a strong message.
So we said, oh, excuse us. And then they had one that was a motor sail, a 60-foot, and Pammy and I got to go out on it for the afternoon.
Ooh. That sounds like fun.
Yes.
And did these guys ever come in Bayside and walk around?
They just came onto the wharf.
Yeah.
But they all had delicious food. Oh, God, of course, we were rationed, and they had roast beef and all this stuff, and they'd give us something to eat. They were nice guys.
Yeah.
They were stationed out of Rockland.
And gosh. Did you have to do blackouts here?
Oh, yeah. The all the streetlights were painted black. Mm-hmm. And of course, I guess there was submarine enemy submarine activity out of the mouth of the bay. We always were told there was.
And you pulled your shades down?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to stop this now. Now I'm going to turn the tape over. Okay, Selma, what's the next anecdote you've got for us?
Well, this is another thing. I tell these stories because my daughter said, now you have to, if they interview you, you have to tell these stories. So that's why I'm telling these stories. Well, again, it was the fearsome fivesome. And Arnie Crosswood came up one day and said that she'd met some guy that was teaching people to fly up at the Belfast Airport. And why didn't we go up and see the planes? So we went up, and there were these five guys up there with five planes. So we got to talking with them, and they said, wouldn't you like a ride? Now, mind you, my mother that summer had been trying to persuade me to fly up to Maine from New York, and I had never flown. My mother loved to fly, and she said, well, why don't you fly up there? I said, no, I'll fly back. I don't want to get killed before I go to Maine. I don't mind getting killed at the end of the summer. So we went up there, and there were all these guys with these little planes, and they said, hey, girls, would you like a ride? And I said, yeah. So each of us got into a plane with a guy that we had never seen before in our life. Okay? And so I'm talking, naturally, I talk. You know I talk. So I said, oh, I knew a guy who used to fly his own plane, a guy named Harvard Wrong. Do you know him? Oh, yeah, we knew him. Poor Harvard, he put the dust of, about 6 months ago. And, so they said, where are you all from? We said, you know, Bayside down the road there. Oh, well, fine. So they flew us down to Bayside. And they buzzed a wall. They flew down. They said, what street do you live on? And I pointed out. They flew at treetop level down Main Street.
Gosh.
They flew out around, and used to have a flagpole on the top. Gina, they had to pull up to clear that flagpole.
How terrible.
I was scared to death.
What reason?
And then we come in, and they start to bank to land, and I grab hold of these things on the side, and he screams at me, let go of those. That's what controls the flaps. And I look, and there are these wire things coming down, held together, not with friction tape, with adhesive tape. So we're coming in for a landing, and he cuts the engine, and I'm screaming at him, put that engine back on. He said, no, this is the way we have to land. Well, we came out just, my knees were like jelly. However, Leanne Tremble has a picture from her mother's album of me standing looking like Amelia Earhart leaning on the wing of that plane. Anyway, we come down to Bayside. Everybody is just irate about these planes flying.
Little knowing that you were on them?
Oh, no one knew. Oh. And no one ever knew.
Oh. How did you keep it that secret?
Why would you? They dare to tell anyone.
Yes.
Because people were just furious.
Just as they would be today?
Of course.
Of course.
And I went in and my aunt was just beside herself.
Oh.
My mother was arriving that night from New York. Mm-hmm. Well, I always told my mother everything because that relieved me of guilt.
Yes. You know?
And I know now mother would rather have not heard it. Anyway, I said to my mother, well, you'll never guess what I did today. And she looked at me and she said, I don't know how you did it, but you flew, didn't you? And I said, any friend told you, any friend told you. Any friend looks at me and says, were you in one of those planes? And I just didn't answer. But that's what we did.
Isn't that something? It's nice that there is a picture to commemorate the occasion.
Yes,
right. And how old would you have been then?
Well, that was before I was in college. I was probably 17.
Young enough to do it, but old enough to be scared to do it.
Oh, yeah. And old enough to know not to do it.
Yes, I'm so an
idiot. But, oh, gee, it was so much fun.
It really was.
So that's probably the capping of my... My 17th summer here was a wonderful summer. And in fact, my sister used to say, oh, for God's sake, Selma, you sound like some movie. She said, 17th summer, I'm sick of period. But we did, we just had a
You were having a great time.
We had a wonderful time.
Now, was there a period between your teenage years here and your adult years that you were absent for a while? Or were you
No, not really, because I came up. I went to school in New York, and I used to come up during the summer. I'd work maybe part of the summer in New York and come up. My aunt wanted me up here for company, and though we still didn't have a car. I didn't get a car until 1950. And even after 1950, I went to graduate school, and I came up. And then through, Joe and I left New York. We got married in 55, and we moved to Atlanta in 56. And so until 1956, we were up here every summer, at least for 2 weeks on our vacation. And it was too long then to really come up on weekends from New York.
Sir.
See, that was a long
Yes.
time. But yeah, we were up here for on our vacations.
Yeah. So would this be a good time to now make the transition to the house that you are in now and talk about when you bought that?
Well,
Or was there anything in between?
No, there was in between after Joe and I got married.
Yeah.
I got kicked out of my house. Well, my sister and her children were coming up at that time because my niece and nephew were 5 and 3 years old. Mm-hmm. They were coming up and staying with my aunt. So Joe's Aunt Ev let us use Ralph's cottage here, you know, and it was just wonderful to us. Joe was like her fourth son, because Joe's mother had died when Joe was 18, and it kind of took her under his wing. She was wonderful. So we used the cottage there for 2 weeks. Because that's what we had for vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, we were in Atlanta, and so we'd really only be in the cottage for about a week each time, each summer. But we came up pretty much every summer, except the summer I was pregnant with Lindsay. It was too close to, she was going to be due in October, and the doctor didn't want me to travel.
Right.
And then, then another summer before Wendy was born, I had some problems, and the doctor had to stay in bed for 6 weeks, so I didn't get up. And I used to sob when I didn't get up here. So, but we came up, and I think there's a gene for Bayside.
I think you're probably right.
Because when we brought Lindsay up the first time, she was 4 years old, and we brought our maid up with us, and Eleanor. And when we got ready to go home, Lindsay came and she said, well, she had an idea that we should go home and leave her here and then she'd see us next summer. And
this
so,
is tearing your heart. You would have done the same thing.
I sympathized with it completely. I thought it was a great idea. And so I said to her, but Lindsay, I said, who would take care of you? Who would cook your food and wash for you? And she said, well, Ella May would. And Ella May said, no, ma'am, not me. Because Ella May was black. She was all set and happy about coming up here. Well, in the South, when people went on vacation and took the maids with them, the maids had a wonderful time.
Because they
because
had a social
whole
life.
Community
sure.
up here. Up here, Ella May, she said, she didn't think there was a person her color within 100 miles. And people would stop and stare at her. And she didn't tell me that until Lindsay proposed this staying up here, and I think Ella May thought I might take her up on. So anyway, so we came up pretty much every summer. We missed a couple of summers. And then after we moved up here, that's when Ed let us use the house all summer.
Right.
And the first summer, I guess I was up here most of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I hired the Lincoln girls, starting down to take care of the kids. And I worked part-time. I worked 3 days a week.
Up here?
No,
down there.
At home. And Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
One of Adelaide's girls would take care of the kids. And then I'd come up Wednesday night. Joe would come up Friday night.
Yeah.
And I'd go home on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
So we were here all during, they were here all summer.
Sure.
Growing up. And that started when Lindsay was probably 9, and Linda was 7.
Mm-hmm.
And we had family around. My aunt was here, my sister was here, Ed was here. But even at that, I look back, I think I was out of my mind. I leave those kids up here. But they survived.
At the time, it seemed fine. Yeah. They survived.
Well, again, it was a different time. It was.
Yes.
There were so many families here.
Sure.
Because Adelaide was here all summer, and she kept our eye on it. Of course,
yes.
Adelaide's girls are as trustworthy
they
as
are.
The world. And so that's what we did.
So that worked fine.
Yep, so that's what we did all through the after we moved back from Atlanta.
How many years were you in Atlanta?
We were in Atlanta for 10 years.
Okay.
And so that was 66 and we came back up here.
Mm-hmm.
We've just come ever since. And then in 76, we inherited the house
from
Joe's grandfather's cousin's wife.
Grandfather's, we'll be interviewing Joe, so we'll get all the details.
Well, Joe's grandfather was Ralph Landers, who owned the big house, Beverly's house.
Yes.
And he was a very important man here in Bayside.
Indeed.
He was head of the corporation, head
sure.
of the golf club, founded the golf club. And and there was this whole musical crowd because he was head of general manager of the New England Conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this whole musical bunch. And Vaughn, who was his first cousin, was vice minister for the BSO.
Mm.
And his wife was a piano teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up. They used to come up here before they even owned the house. And then they bought the house. I can tell you all about it because I've been researching.
Oh, great.
It, yes. And I've just found out lots about the third owner of it.
Do you want to get some of it on there?
No.
Or we'll come to the history another way.
So Vaughn died in 1957, and then Julie was there, and we got, well, Joe knew Julie all his life, of course. I met her when I was sitting in one of her apple trees stealing apples when I was about 14 or 15 years old.
Uh-huh.
And Julie and Vaughn came down the driveway to the house,
mm-hmm.
and there's the apple tree, which happens to be now Jerry's apple tree, wasn't Julie's at the time,
mm-hmm.
and there were fireworks. In the apple tree, stealing apples. And Julia, Vaughn stopped the car, and Julia got out and said, Vaughn, there are 5 thieves in our apple tree. And I said, or someone said, no, there were 6. And then when I found out after we were married that Julia was Joe's relative, I thought, oh my God. So when I first met her, I thought, she's going to remember me. And she didn't. So my penchants for confessing, I told her, and she didn't even remember it. She thought it was a riot. And Julia was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful woman.
Great.
And boy, would it have been great. great to have an oral history of her.
Yes.
And she could tell stories that were just, I mean, just wonderful.
Yeah.
So, when she had no children, and she had a cousin or niece that lived in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
and she and Joe's aunt Ev cooked up the division of the properties
yes.
here, because Ev wanted us to have a cottage. And
mm-hmm.
it was a question of whether we'd get Ralph's or Aunt Anne's, which is the white one down the hill from the big one
mm-hmm.
that Joe's cousin used to own. So.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently one day, Julia and Aunt Ev were sitting there, undoubtedly over a drink, and they decided that Joe and I should have that cottage. Because Julia said, I know they'll love it the way she and Lon did.
Well, they made a good choice.
And they, she was right.
It's a wonderful cottage, and you do
it. And it was one of the nicest things ever anyone's ever done.
Yeah.
Because the thing that's interesting, she left it to the both of us equally, not to Joe and me as his wife.
Yes, well, that says
and
a lot to her
regard
for you.
A wonderful gesture.
Yes, it was.
And,
so what year was that?
76.
And you have done what to it? You've added a...
Well, we've added that room and winterized the kitchen, winterized the room. It used to have a side porch on it.
Mm-hmm.
We took that off.
Mm-hmm.
Used to have off that porch was a maid's room with a bath and a toilet and a shower. We took that off. And that, that became our bath and insulated that whole wing.
Let's think of a way to describe where this wonderful house is for people listening to this tape.
Well, I can tell you, because I just wrote it in the history I'm writing of it, that it's down the last driveway on Broadway as you go to Belfast. The last driveway on the right,
mm-hmm.
just before the stop sign, down on the left of that driveway, right on the water.
There it
is. And it is a yellow Victorian with a slate, with a massive roof,
mm-hmm.
and a slate second story, and the roof used to be slate. And the thing that's interesting is that it's the same color that it was when it was built.
Oh, that is interesting.
And it was built, and the reason we know this is there's a beam. You see, I know all this now because I'm researching that cottage.
Sure.
And there's a beam that goes, well, across the partway into the room. And a part of the wall over the door that goes down to the cellar. That is the outside of the original house, and it's exactly the same color that the house
great.
Is.
That's great.
So,
now that you've given us the data on your house, why don't you give us just the basic biographical detail on yourself and your kids?
Okay. So. I was born on January 15th, 1929. Joe was born January 1st, 1928. I always thought that Joe was lying when he said he was born New Year's Day. But then after we married, I thought if there was any day Joe would choose to be born, it would have been New Year's Day. And it turned out that it was New Year's Day. So we're just a year apart. And then we have two children, Lindsay, who's named after his side of the family, who was born in 1958 in Atlanta. And Wendy, whose name is Gwendolyn, after my sister, and she was born in Atlanta in 1961. And Wendy is married to Amro El Jarudi, who is from Cairo, and a wonderful, wonderful young man. And they have two children, Rasha, who is now 8, and Nadim, who is going to be 6, a week from today. A week from today.
All right.
On the 24th, anyway. So, and Wendy and the children have taken to spending the sums with us, which is a mixed blessing, but is in the main a positive thing.
And for those kids,
yeah.
will just be a source of all the kinds of wonderful memories that you're recounting.
Well, it's different. It's different now. It's different from when, I think the last generation that was like ours
mm-hmm.
was our children's,
mm-hmm.
and their children are not having the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Because it's...
What changes do you see?
Well, it's because the mothers are working.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
so,
and which I'm not knocking.
Sure.
But it's a fact of life, and I think that a lot of the young families can't afford houses up here now.
That's right.
And they can't afford to have the summer off, and
mm-hmm.
so what we're finding with Wendy's children is there are not children here that are here all summer.
No, they're renters.
And so, they're children of my friends who are here for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just changing the climate of things.
Yes.
They're making good friends, but we had friends that we knew all summer.
It isn't
and
that way
are solid friendships, and it's not that way now.
No, it's not.
And it's,
but they may still, as my kids have, keep in touch with those.
Do they?
Sure.
Because it must have been more the same with yours like that.
I had the good fortune to be here all summer, but most other families are not, and yet both of my kids have made good friends
that
they still have as adults.
I'm glad to hear that.
I think that will be. Now, I want to give you an opportunity to toot your horn a little bit, because you have, as an adult, had an ongoing caring relationship with this community, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about some of the things that you've done in no particular order.
Well, I haven't done much, really.
What you've done is packed a wall or something.
Well, what I've done is been married to Joe, and Joe is the one that's really done a ton of lot.
Well, you're right at his side.
He was a overseer and then president of the corporation, and he, I think, has really... Someone had said to him the other day that someone had said to the person who was talking that Joe had held this community together over a very tough time. Joe doesn't feel that way, but I think he's had a very strong presence.
Yes.
I think that he did. I really haven't done that much. I don't know. I've talked a lot. And God knows I love the community.
Well, tell us about some of your work with the Historical Society, which you started.
I started the Historical Society, and for nefarious reasons, and I don't think I'll go into
it. You don't want to?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. But it's been a happy outcome.
Yeah, I perceived the need, let me put it this way, for the convenience that if there was a nonprofit organization, that people can draw from that what they want to. And it occurred to me that what would be a viable thing was Historical Society. So when I formed it, and I did pretty much, well, the germ of the idea came from Gene Witherell.
Is that right?
Oh yeah. And the idea of a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I thought, what kind of nonprofit? And I thought, Historical Society, reasonable thing to do. So we took some money from the Bayside Improvement Association. Mm-hmm. Gene and I were the ones that controlled the money. Gene and I talked about it, and we figured that it was a worthwhile thing to do. And we went, and we had a for real, honest to God nonprofit set up so that everything is totally the way it should be with that, so people can donate money and all that. And the lawyer said at the time, well, you know, it has to be a real nonprofit, it has to be a real organization and not just a couple of members. And I said, well, how many members do we need? And she said, well, how many do you think you'll have? And I said, oh, maybe 30. And she said, well, that would be enough. It just has to be other people that are contributing. You just can't go and fund it yourself.
Right.
Well, the first year we had 132 and it just overwhelmed. And that's when I decided we really had to be an honest-to-God historical society, and we really are. And I am so pleased with it.
You should be, because it's amazing we got along with that one for so long.
Well, I know, because there was obviously just people waiting here for it at the Historical Society.
Yeah.
And I was president for 4 years, and I loved it. But I am obsessive. I am an obsessive person. And it took me a long time to acknowledge that, but it was what made me successful at work.
Yeah.
But it wore me out, and I hated to have to leave it. But I thought, time has come, and it's going on.
It certainly is.
It will go on.
Yes.
And I'm very pleased with it. And I guess maybe that is one thing that I have done. I think it's a huge thing.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. The office that we were sitting in right now in the basement of the...
Well, that I have to say, that was my idea.
Was it your idea?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because not only am I obsessive, but I'm competitive. And when I saw the overseer's office, I said, I want one. I want one just like that.
That's right.
Well, but poor Beverly, her house was being taken over by Historical Society.
That's right.
And it is a beautiful room.
Yes, and does Dick Tardif get a lot of credit for the hands-on?
Well, I hope so. I mean, he did all of it.
Yeah.
You know,
really
I mean, I hope. Oh, I certainly acknowledge it, and, you know,
Every
time I see him.
But
I mean,
he's the one that did it.
Oh, he's the one that did it, absolutely.
But I'm
Norman James, and, well, first Dick Leibniz, And then Norman James drew up the plans.
Okay.
And then Dick and Norman built it. And it is, I think, a great thing.
Yeah.
And what we've got to do, as I was outside the door there, we've got to have a sign made, Bayside Historical Preservation Society,
yes,
to go with that door outside.
Yes. Very good.
So I've done that, and I think that's all I've done. Oh, yeah. I was on the damn planning board.
Yeah.
When Jerry was doing his subdivision.
Yeah.
And I was only an alternate, though. I wasn't a member on that. And
then what about, you mentioned the old Bayside Improvement.
Oh, well, yeah, that was, well, actually, Ann Rice and Donnie Rice started that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a funny thing. That was, do you really want to hear all of this?
Sure.
Ann Rice came up one time, and it was like Chicken Little, that the world is coming to an end. She had just by chance gone to the overseers meeting,
uh-huh,
and they used to meet down at the yacht club.
Yeah.
And Al Keith had come in and suggested that they sell the community hall because it couldn't be repaired. It was in such poor repair.
Uh-huh.
And the intimation was that Al Keith might buy it. Well, Ann Rice came up and said, they're going to sell the community hall, they're going to sell the community hall. Well, you know, that community hall is dear to our hearts, to this generation.
Yeah.
So Ann Rice and Donnie Rice and Joe and I, but Ann and Donnie, the primary ones, and Bob and Gene Witherell got together to raise money to fix our community hall.
Mm-hmm.
And there were amounts bandied about that was going to cost $20,000 to fix it, and we couldn't afford it and all that. Well, we got people out for estimates. Oh, they had said that it was condemned. So I took it upon myself to find out who and why it was condemned,
mm-hmm,
who condemned it and why. It was not condemned, you see. But the word was passed by people who will not be named,
yeah,
that it was condemned. Well, the reason they did that was indirectly my fault, because we were over in the cottage next door here, and my niece, Susan Lopez, who's now Susan Woodrow, very efficient young lady, had a sock hop here, or whatever they're called,
uh-huh,
one weekend. And she advertised it all along the coast of Maine.
Uh-huh.
And it was bedlam. It was bedlam. We were up in the cottage there, and the walls of that cottage were just,
uh-huh,
vibrating.
Uh-huh.
Well, Mr. Pittman, who lived across, right across the big house across there,
mm-hmm,
and Fred Kelly, who lived where?
James.
Naturally, we're not happy about this.
Indeed.
So my suspicion is that they decided they got down Keith to have it condemned. I think that's what happened. So when I called up the state, I called up the town, there was no condemnation.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, Anne and Donnie, well, we started raising money. And just like with the Historical Society, where we got membership without doing a thing,
mm-hmm,
we got money with hardly,
mm-hmm,
doing a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Don started, he funded having the roof fixed, and we knew, and then eventually we had underpinnings fixed. And the Bayside Improvement Association was for the sole purpose of maintaining this building.
Okay.
And that's what we did. And it was a wonderful thing, the way people rallied around.
Yeah.
But the organization wasn't formal. I mean, we didn't register it with the state or anything like that. So then when it was Gene that had said, if we wanted to keep some of our property,
mm-hmm,
couldn't the corporation donate it to the Bayside Improvement Association? But it couldn't because we weren't registered as anything. So that's where the Historical Society,
yeah,
came in. If the corporation found the need to divest themselves,
yes,
then that would have been an appropriate thing. So that was the connection.
Yeah.
About it. And that Bayside Improvement Association was one of Bayside's finest hours because they did rally around and save this building.
And I'm glad you just told about it because I can't think of any other place where that is actually described.
Oh, well, yeah, there are those of us that know it.
Exactly.
But it's funny how memory isn't genetic for a community.
Exactly.
And I know I was pointing out to someone the other day that John Coughlin, mm-hmm. who the memorial service was for last week, that the reason that the Coughlins and Trent Holmes are going through the Yacht Club of giving this money for Books First, mm-hmm. is because they have a long association with it. Joanne's father started it.
Of course.
And John is named for John Short.
Yes.
But when I told that to this person, he had no idea. No knowledge of that.
All right, look deep into your memory bank before we finish this tape and see if there's anything else that you know that others might not.
We'll turn
it
off.
Turn it up for a second while we do this. Selma, thank you very much. You have been an entertaining and informative.
It's been my pleasure. Yeah.
Great.
So I have just enough ego to love talking about myself.
You have had an interesting life. Thank you.